This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, whether that's Rovers throwing in a drab 0-0 in the Championship or taking Newcastle all the way to a penalty shootout in the fifth round of the FA Cup, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So, the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18+. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, and I just want to caveat this conversation before I move on to you, Rich, that we are recording this on Monday the 8th of April, that is, I told you, the 7th, and the Monday the 8th of April, which is, of course, before the Bristol City match. We don't know what that score is by the time this podcast comes out. Of course, if we've won at Ashton Gate, then mood will be high. We've lost, and all these things can be dated quite quickly, but
you are listening to the 4000 Holes podcast, brought to you by the people at brfcs.com and sponsored by the lovely people at The Terrace.
Hello, this is Sam Smodix here and welcome to the 4000 Holes podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the 4000 Holes podcast, the What Now Show, proudly part of the TalkSport Fan Network. I'm your host, Roger, joined this week by my good friends Ian, Michael, Rich, and Mike Delap as well. Three topics to get to, as we normally do each and every podcast. And I'll kick off straight away with question number one to this week's panel, which is, irrespective of what happens this season, has John Eustace proven in recent performances that he is the right man to take the club forward next season? Michael, you've been on the podcast for a while, so welcome back. And what are your thoughts on question number one, topic number one?
Yeah, thanks for asking me, Roger. It's good to be back on the podcast. The thing is, I don't know if we've discussed this on the podcast or whether it was just one of the chats in the car on the way back from Rovers, but Louis summed it up really well when he said, you can imagine John Dal Thomason taking this club into the Premier League. You can't imagine John Eustace. So I think he could probably, rather than possibly, get us over the line and stay up this season. But is there a project? Is there a John Eustace project of, you know, bringing young players through, playing in a certain way that's exciting and new, and he's going to take Rovers, you know, into the next century, into the next decade? I don't know. I don't think there is. I think it's more survival mode at the moment. It still feels quite hand to mouth.
So welcome back to you, Mike. Your thoughts on topic number one?
Thanks, Roger. And yes, they must just be like invite Michael back night or something like that. So yeah, just pleased to join in. But I actually feel like the club's appointments have sort of mirrored, I suppose you use the word project, but I kind of go back to sort of when they hired Tony Mowbray, things were obviously a little bit of disarray. And I think he sort of outlived his usefulness. And then the project of, you know, investing in youth, developing players, trying to get back up to the Premier League really suited John Dal Thomason up to a point. But they've kind of gone like really full circle now back into, you know, reducing funding, club in a lot of difficulty, a lot of disarray behind the scenes, etc. So actually, I'll pinch Mr. Taylor's word. It's kind of gone back a little bit into survival mode where I don't think anybody looks at the club in the next 12, 24 months in the foreseeable future and says, actually, there is a shot at going up. It's very much what can we do with, you know, the increasingly shorter pair of arms that we seem to be travelling around the world with. So actually, to me, just based on what we've seen so far, and I know it's a small sample side, I actually think Eustace is quite a good fit for what we want, a little bit backs to the wall, not a lot of fun, you know, not a lot to play with, not a lot of bright future in terms of investing large sums in players. It's actually, what can we scrap together? Can we find a bit of character? Can we find a bit of steel? And I think just the way he's presented himself so far matches that up quite nicely.
Yeah, and I just want to caveat this conversation before I move on to you, Rich, that we are recording this on Monday the 8th of April, that is, I told you the 7th, and the Monday the 8th of April, which is, of course, before the Bristol City match. We don't know what that score is by the time this podcast comes out, probably later on this week. You will know that. And of course, if we've won at Ashton Gate, then mood will be high. If we've lost, and all these things can be dated quite quickly. But irrespective of that, that's why the question is sort of a bit more broadly. I'll come to you, Rich, with the question. Obviously, I was saying about the right man to take the club forward next season, regardless of what happens. So what's your thoughts?
I think it's probably a big thing irrespective of what happens, because the goals are pretty stark. It's success or failure is a big thing in these final few games. But I looked at the word take the club forward and I'm thinking maybe not. But then the other part is who could, because there's going to be a massive rebuild job on yet again. We thought we were getting now, and they seem to have blown all the good work, you know, that was done last season. So I've seen a lot of things banded about the progress they've made of Eustace, and while he has made them hard to beat, 13 points, 12 games, that's actually fewer than they've got over the course of the season. The losing fewer games, I think, is the right man for the situation now, but longer term, I'm probably not so sure, but equally, I can't see what massive amount of difference it's going to make unless there's a big game behind the scenes, again, which I'm not sure is going to happen. So the right man for now, longer term, agree that I can't see him getting back into the Premier League under Eustace. But then again, it's probably going to take some genius, which maybe Thomason had, and to have just lost that little bit of spark. So for long-term stability or short-term stability, in the fact that I can't see him going down under Eustace, I certainly can't see a massive dramatic amount of change, but equally that's going to come down to the recruitment. I think that'll be the big thing in the summer, no matter who's in charge.
Yeah, no, Ian, I'll bring you into this conversation. That still feels like, irrespective of that question, and we talked about taking the club forward, that really the Venkies, the Indian tax laws, the money, the behind-the-scenes issue, the board level, you know, the list goes on. Is that it feels as though Eustace is merely a pawn in a bigger game. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think there are so many constraints placed on whoever is in charge at Rovers right now that it's difficult to see who could do a job other than Merlin the Magician or something like that. Venkies seem to be saying one thing, but the noises coming out of the court case illustrate something else. So it's just a technical and administrative issue. Okay, well, send us some money then. Then we don't have to use the Adam Wharton money or the David Raya money or one fears in July, the Sammy Smodics money. I think that's the biggest issue. So if that's where we are, keeping the lights on, then just sell us. Don't keep doing this to yourselves. You know, just get rid of us. So within that context, any manager coming in is going to find it challenging. I echo... Well, it's quite spooky, actually, what Michael said, because I had the same conversation at halftime on Saturday with Tony Leake, late of this podcast, who we shared exactly the same comments. He's a safe pair of hands. I think he's very Tony Mowbray-esque. I think he's very organised, very methodical. But that X factor that JDT had has gone. And I think if we'd have given him the resources and if we'd have given him the players and the players with the attitude that he wanted and with the potential, I think we could have got to the Premier League. I really struggle seeing Rovers getting into the Premier League. I mean, on the last episode of this podcast, we estimated our percentages as to how we thought we'd stay in the Championship. And right now, that still is our number one priority. Never mind about, are we going to get into the Premier League? Are we going to stay in the Championship? And it's not cut and dried yet. That Sheffield Wednesday game still fills me with absolute trepidation. So to answer the question, has John Eustace done in... Well, he will be in charge next year. There's no doubt about that, irrespective of what we think. Echoing what the previous panellists have said, yeah, I think he's a safe pair of hands. I don't think we'll go down this season now.
How impressive have they been, though, recently in terms of the performance away at Middlesbrough, the battling performance against Southampton? I know just around me at the match that the feeling of the fans was quite positive on Saturday. Today it was a 0-0 draw. Mike, you were there on Saturday. You feel the same in terms of the feeling that you got walking off the pitch that perhaps the fans were quite proud? And we spoke a couple of podcasts ago about more labore than arte, if you will, and sort of hard work, and maybe a side that isn't pushing for promotion, but just works hard, does the basics quite well, is what us as Rovers fans actually really want?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll obviously elaborate a little bit more than just saying yes, back to your point, but I think there was a certain, and I'm not just talking about the weather here, by the way, there was a certain warmth that came out of the grounds, certainly in the second half on Saturday. You know, quite loud choruses of Eustace's Blue and White Army, which again have you know, been a bit slow coming to the fore. Actually, I it's the first time in a while actually where it felt like, you know, there's going to be some adversity here, but actually the crowd are going to respond in a very positive fashion to that, rather than perhaps getting a little bit, you know, dragged into the turmoil a bit. I'll pick on Saturday's performance. I'm 40 in a few weeks, and I've spent my career, I say career, I've never played professionally, but I've spent my life as a footballer playing in defence, so I'm actually a massive sucker for a well-oiled defensive unit. I actually thought we were absolutely terrific on Saturday in the way that, you know, ball got lost and there was 11, or 10, we'll assume pairs were stood roughly where he was supposed to be, 10 players sort of very furiously, hastily getting back into unit, into position, you know, starving the space and looking to counter again as well. As far as nil-nil draws go, it was actually my favourite one I can recall in a long, 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 long time. But I definitely, just to cycle back on your point about the crowd, there's definitely been a shift in their viewpoint of the manager and how the team's playing in these last three games, and I'd say deservedly so. I actually, this sounds really bad, but I actually felt a lot better coming out of the Southampton game than I did the Sunderland one, which actually just felt, you know, so strange. you know, almost like what's going on. But yeah, definitely, you know, I think that enthusiasm should, fingers crossed, carry us over the line now.
See, and I'll just say this. You were there at Ewood, weren't you, on Saturday?
Yeah.
How shrewd, perhaps, was it to bring Morten Gams-Pedersen out before the ground and perhaps get that little bit of groundswell of sort of positive, you know, emotion, if you will, and sort of the round of applause that he got was sensational before the match. Do you think, again, the club should be and perhaps could be doing more in that sort of extra by margin? Do you think it was completely unrelated?
I think it's coincidence, I have to say. Although there has been talk, hasn't there, of two guy coming back as an ambassador. Although if you believe everything about certain charity matches where certain panellists kick certain footballs in certain players' faces, he didn't do that gratis, shall we say. So I think if Rovers want two guy to turn up at Ewood as an ambassador, it's going to cost us. So that, I think that's going to be quite an interesting one to see how that unfolds. And I've not seen anything through official channels. I've only seen it on Twitter. So I think the Morten Gams-Pedersen thing was more coincidence, I think, than anything else. It doesn't do any harm to get the crowd feeling generally positive. A story I've talked about on I've bored other people with, so I might as well bore our audience with it, is away at Southampton before Christmas, they showed a video that was so stirring and so motivational, I actually wanted Southampton to win at one point, that it was just absolutely extraordinary. This is a club that won the FA Cup in 1976 and has won, I think, bugger all before or since. They show these images of that day and the former players, and obviously Letizia featured prominently in that, and a certain Alan Shearer, and it was incredibly stirring and motivational. And then this brass band came on to play when the Saints go marching in, and the crowd were absolutely fever pitch when that had happened. I think there's scope at Rovers to do more than that, more of that kind of thing. I don't think we can quite pull it off to the same extent that they can, given the size of our crowd and all the rest of it. But having said that, something worth thinking about, and it's something worth trying. Whether Morten Gams-Pedersen can do it on his own or not, I'm not entirely sure.
Well, just going to segue nicely into section two here, but last time I believe Morten Gams-Pedersen was at Ewood was for the Preston game in January 2020. I know because I met him in the lounge after the match, had a picture taken with him. And the next game but one, Rovers went and beat Sheffield Wednesday 5-0. So who knows, maybe Morten should be rolled out more often. Talking of superstitions, we're going to come on to this on section two. We'll be back after this.
Hey, Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome back to section two of the 4,000 Horse Podcast, the What Now Show, with myself, Roger, joined this week by Rich, Michael, Mikey, and Ian. And I'm going to come straight to Rich with question two, which is, promotion and relegation battles usually bring out the superstitions, with manager John Eustace himself admitting he didn't wear his hat against Sunderland to try and gain that extra bit of luck. What superstitions do the panel have? Or what stories can they share? Rich, you've been around press boxes. You've been in the, been there with the high mighty and the big wigs. There must be superstitions flying all over the show.
Yeah, so mine's probably boring. I used to drive. There's two ways to get to Brockle from the way that I came in. I used to drive the same way until they lost and then changed the direction. But the story, the lads at the club, the media guys, tend to travel together and congregate in one place, get in one car and go. And they can probably give you a run-by-run of league table of when they meet at certain places, what the results are. So it came to the final game of the season against Millwall away. And there's different cars they can take as well. And probably midway through last season, the club got a new car that they could use. And just as they started doing that was when the form absolutely plummeted. So it comes to the final game of the season away at Millwall, which is, I think, mile-wise, the furthest that there is to drive. Bank holiday Monday. They've gone in one of the older cars because the record in said car is much improved. Driven down to Millwall. Obviously, a brilliant result, but unfortunately didn't matter for much. And on the way home, they broke down. And they finally got back, I think, at 5:30 in the morning, having spent about 3 hours of Corley services waiting for different recoverers. So everybody at the club is certainly playing their part. Yeah, their superstitions are so bad that they can, like I say, about who's been in the car, who's done what, who's driven, all that kind of thing. So they'll certainly be in amongst it for these last few weeks. I can guarantee you that.
Michael Taylor, I'm going straight to you because you're surely not the type of supporter that goes in for this superstition. You'll walk under ladders, walk on crack, salute magpies, all that, won't you? You don't buy into any of this rubbish.
I don't have any match day superstitions, you're right. I do have match day habits, though. And I have been disappointed in the last few years that Levers doesn't seem to be open on Bolton Road before the game. I used to really like a Levers pie. And we used to try to get there in time to be able to get one of their chicken and bean, which one of the lads particularly liked. But they slowly started running out of pies. And I almost can't face buying them now. We took our nephew to the Ipswich home game and I got him the full Rovers experience, a bag of football gums for a quid from the petrol station. We managed to get a cheeky car park in Lower Darwin for nothing. And I bought him a pie and I also managed to steal him a team sheet because I know a way of sneaking into the lounge to get one because he wanted a souvenir programme. But of course, that's yet another thing that Rovers no longer do. Though I did, of course, buy him a copy of the 4,000 Holes fanzine.
Well, hey, Ian, coming to you next, you must have superstitions going up the kazoo here. You must have thousands of them, surely. I can see you hopping on one foot as I speak even now.
There was a time, I have to say, there absolutely was a time. I think there are two occasions that spring largely to mind. One was in 1992 when we had that dreadful run where we couldn't win for Toffee. And I tried all sorts, a bit like as Rich has just articulated, parking in different places, taking different routes to the ground, all sorts of things. And then eventually, so yeah, we got a draw, didn't we, at Tranmere or something, and that sort of like broke the curse. Nothing to do with me, I have to say, but I did try. And then, of course, in 1995, it was getting to the point where you're sort of thinking we just need a result. And I did have a lucky pair of underpants. I didn't keep a spreadsheet to correlate, you know, wearing them, but they were my favoured pair for home fixtures. And of course, I attributed massive amounts of success. As I've got older, I realise it's a load of bunkum. But to Michael's point, yeah, I have routines which keep me sort of like nicely calm and on track and all the rest of it. So if the traffic's really bad coming over the M62 and I'm late and I can't get to the pub to have a drink and go to the loo, or I can't buy a pie before a game, or I can't park where I want to, then that unsettles me and it gives me a nervous, edgy feeling, much like our back four have had in recent games.
Why coming to you next with some superstitions? Obviously, you've got two young children as well who are big Rovers fans. Do they have superstitions, or do you have superstitions?
I'm glad you just mentioned them, because I've actually just stumbled into one, which I'm hopefully already selling as an accidental superstition. Me and my son are slightly more regular match goers than bringing my daughter along, who I'm going to say probably largely more there for the sort of post-match McDonald's on the corner. But I've actually just stumbled into this and checked the home games this year. She's actually been to four games this year and we haven't lost. We've won three and drawn at the weekend against Sam. So if anyone fancies buying my daughter a season ticket and either strapping it to a seat or something, maybe we can get promotion next year and go through undefeated. But yeah, I was just checking back through. We had West Brom at home on the opening day. There's Birmingham City 4-2 and Stoke City, the game where John Eustace did or didn't take charge of his opening game. And obviously the 0-0 at the weekend. So yeah, that's an accidental one, but I'm happy to back that and say that we'll carry on that on a larger sample size next season.
For goodness sake, get her a ticket for the Sheffield Wednesday game now. Wrapper in cotton wool and bubble wrap.
Is there some sort of double match bundle I can get her in on the Coventry game as well, just to really see this over the line or something?
Sure, somebody from the club will be listening to this podcast and can pull the necessary strings. I find it fascinating for superstitions myself, because I must admit I have one of those. I remember when I was growing up and, you know, my dad's never one for wanting to give a prediction before the match, because if you predict Rovers are going to win, they'll lose. And if you predict they're going to lose, then you're being negative and they're going to lose as well. So yeah, I also play cricket as well, which I know Ian and several others of you on the panel, I'm sure, have played cricket. And you probably cannot find a more superstitious sport than cricket, with left pad on first, or, you know, numbers in cricket have mystical powers, of course, depending on where you are in the world, 111 or 87. And John Eustace, of course, didn't wear his hat also on Saturday, and we drew. So look out for John Eustace not wearing a hat at Ashton Gate and Elland Road this week. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you should wear a hat at one of the games where we might lose anyway, and then perhaps just, you know, test the theory. You know, Elland Road leads away, wear the hat anyway. And if you get a result, it's positive. Who knows? Of course, we'd love to hear all your superstitions as well. And you can join us on our usual threads on the brfcs.com message boards. And of course, you can find us on Twitter and the socials. We're going to be back with part three. We're going to have a look at March Players of the Month, and also who deserves the unsung award this season for Player of the Year. We know Smodix is going to win Player of the Year. Who outside of Smodix would be panel's Player of the Year? That and more to come, including more from Mikey Delap's children and your mascot experience also to boot. So it's plenty to stick around for. Join us in part three after these messages.
4,000 Holes in Blackburn, Lancashire. It's from a Beatles song. Give it a listen.
Welcome back to part three of this week's 4,000 Holes podcast, the What Now Show, proudly part of the Hawk Sport Fan Network, with myself, Roger, joined this week by Rich, Mike, Michael, and Ian. And Ian, I'm going to come straight back to you for the results of BRFCS.com's March Player of the Month. Take it away.
Thanks, Roger. Yeah, there were no surprises. It was Sammy Smodics who won it hands down. Sondra Tronstad was in second place with a couple of sort of solid performances. And interestingly, in third place was Yassin Ayari, who had impressed with a few of his substitute appearances. So he took the bronze medal for March. But Sammy Smodics, I think, as you alluded to, is very much marching out ahead. All those people, myself included, who back in July tipped Adam Wharton to win Player of the Year, might be right. It's just that it'd be Crystal Palace's Player of the Year.
So bringing that on further, because obviously we've nothing really to discuss in terms of Smodics winning March Player of the Year, and probably nothing really to discuss with him winning Player of the Year, which voting is open now on the official website, rovers.co.uk. Mike, I'm going to come back to you for this one and talk to me about some unsung heroes. Who do you think deserves a mention outside of Sammy Smodics as sort of having a positive campaign this season?
I'm glad you came to me first because I thought he might get a mention elsewhere. But actually, I've been massively impressed with Scott Wharton this last month. I think, you know, perhaps there's a bit of context behind that, of course, in the sense that, you know, he's obviously struggled to gain a place in the side. He's obviously lost confidence, loss of form as well. But actually, I think, you know, his sort of all-round game looks a little bit more compact, a bit more refined than perhaps some we've seen him previously as well, particularly in terms of his positioning. He's rock solid in the air. He was doing a really good job at the weekend as well. But yeah, I mean, I think it speaks volumes now that there can't be a single Rovers fan out there that thinks that back four's worth tampering in its current guise as well. And Hayden Carter, who I know is still injured coming back, shouldn't just walk back into the slot he vacated because it's settled, it's good, and he's been a massive part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting as well that I think it was pretty unanimous that Kyle McFadzean was the February player of the month, and we were all waxing lyrically about him. And of course, him getting sent off against Plymouth, who knows, maybe it was a blessing in disguise in terms of reverting to that back four. Michael, who's impressed you outside of Sammy Smodics, not just in March, but maybe in the last few months or over the season?
Yeah, it's going to be a slightly controversial choice, this, because I like to zig when a lot of Rovers fans zag. There always seems to be a Rovers player, wherever I sit in the ground, who those around me don't like. And for a lot of this season, it was Tyrese Dolan. And I actually said to Louis at half-time in the Ipswich Town game, when I thought it was a poor, poor first half, and I said, this is just the sort of game where Dolan goes missing when we don't need him to. And I was completely wrong. I thought he really, really put in a great shift in that game and showed a lot of character. And he was also at the heart of the action in the win at Sunderland. You know, I love the smile on his face when he's on form. And he's not one of those players that does that really annoying personal gesture where it's like they've got the ball at the feet and they've no one to pass to and they throw their arms up. There are a couple that do that, which really, really frustrates me in our squad. But now I've seen a real maturity with Dolan. Obviously, he struggles with form and his head's not always right. But I thought in that Ipswich game, you know, he really, really tried to carry us over the line. And I was pleased for him that he got on the score sheet at Sunderland.
Yeah, no, Saturday against Southampton, it was probably one of those team of the match performances, wasn't it, where you really couldn't sing anybody who had a poor game. But one of my guesses, as I usually guess with the people around me, who's going to be the man of the match, I said Tyrese Dolan, so I thought he was fantastic. Dylan Markande as well. I mean, not mentioned too much in the podcast this season, or not in glowing terms, but yeah, I thought Dylan Markande, it looked like he'd, both of them have kind of like strengthened upper body and been macy and trying to get round people, were sort of bullish, get stuck in and be hard to get past defensively. So yeah, credit to.
I was going to say, for Markande, it was the tough tackling, ball winning, harden up midfielder Dylan Markande, which is not a phrase I expected to use.
I mean, I hope John Eustace has said to him, listen, Dylan, the only way you're going to play in my team is if you can do this. And he rose to it. And of course, again, we're recording this before Bristol, but I would imagine with Ryan Hedges probably done for the season, he's going to play a lot of the last five games, or he's going to be called upon a lot in the last five games. So yeah, credit to Dylan there. Rich, I'm going to come to you in terms of who's a unsung hero from recent times or over the season? There's one name not been mentioned just yet that's sort of screaming out to me. Maybe you can do the honours.
I was just going to mention Smodics. You're right in thinking that he will run away with it. But over Armstrong not winning it when he scored 29 goals and we gave it to Kaminski for finishing 15th. But that's one that always stick with me. But Harry Pickering's the obvious one, just because of the amount he plays, and when he doesn't play, they miss him. So as consistent performers go over the course of the season, I'd say Pickering. Outside of that, I know Trond's probably made the turnaround of the season the same way that JRC did last year to finish JRC's runner-up, didn't he, last year? I think Trondstad's probably going to do the same, and that took a while to find his feet, but has become the player that they've needed in that central midfield. One of the biggest surprises, and no longer with at the club, was James Hill. I thought when they brought him in the summer, I was a bit you know, thinking where does he fit in? Where have we gone from bringing Danny Batt in to bringing James Hill? And then all of a sudden he was one of the standout consistent performers during a good run in the side. And I think his loss was a big one. But I do hope that Smolic runs away with it, because just for the fact that the way he just plays on through everything. I mean, he's been flogged within an inch of his life this season. It is quite incredible how he's still going, because there must be 10 games this season where most people, you just bring him off because he's literally not been able to function properly. But just that is Sammy as a character, and I think he deserves huge credit. You can't take away the goals and everything that he brings, but just that personality, which I think the club as a whole and definitely the team has lacked that personality. So I hope he gets all the plaudits that he deserves. And yeah, rather than, maybe he is an unsung hero, because people kind of get used to it in the same way they probably did with Armstrong when he scored 29 goals. But I think from what Smodics has done, this is about as good a standout individual season as you can remember for a hell of a long time for a Rovers player.
I talk about in American sports, they talk about face of the franchise, and really Smodics is the face of Blackburn Rovers at the moment, isn't he, in terms of he's the best player, he's the first name on the team sheet, he's the one that all the kids have got on the back of the shirts, he's the marketable one, he's an Ireland international, he's going to win all the awards, you'd have thought, at the end of the season. So yeah, credit to Smodics. Tronstad was the name that I was thinking was a bit of one of the obvious ones for me, in terms of there's not many really to choose from this year in terms of probably as a top three or top four, but yeah, Tronstad's been one of my unsung heroes. Ian, come to you. Is anybody who's not been named who deserves a mention, or anybody perhaps who you feel will kick on next season, or anything interesting to add?
Well, yeah, he was mentioned briefly in the conversation we just had, but I've been mightily impressed with Joe Rankin-Costello. I mean, his versatility counts for massive amounts, that he can get stuck in any one of a number of positions. I'm wondering whether next year's midfield will be Tronstad, Buckley and Joe Rankin-Costello. I think that will be quite an interesting mix if that comes to pass. We shall see. But I think he's been excellent. But echoing what the guys have already said, I think Tyrese Dolan is playing, dare I say it, like a player with a year left on his contract. Would that be unkind or whatever? He's mightily impressed me in the last few games, that's for sure. I think his work rate has suddenly gone up through the roof, and his effectiveness, more to the point, has gone up through the roof. I think he's been excellent. Of the loanees, James Hill was the one that stuck out, and when he went back, there was a bit of a concern, I think. And as we've already said, Callum McFadden filled in quite nicely in January and February. But I think our opponents have wised up to his lack of pace, and the move back to a back four will limit his game time, I suspect, between now and the end of the season. But he did a great job for a few games, which is what we needed.
It's just such
a
pity with Rankin-Costello that you know you're not going to get 46 games out of him. He's just not that player, is he? Same for Ryan Hedges. Interestingly, of course, everyone knew the stat last week that Hedges, Gallagher, Smodics and Dolan, first time they'd ever played together this season was away at Sunderland. And of course, the result speaks for itself. And then
that's the last time this season as well.
Yeah, and they were the four that were together for that good run last season with Sheffield United at home and Leicester away and QPR away, those sort of four or five wins they had in February. So yeah, that's our thoughts. Of course, you can get involved in the debate over on the forums and on Twitter and all the socials. But I'm going to end this week's podcast with a little bit of AOB, any other business, and throw it back to Mikey DeLapp, who had the very privilege or the great honour of having your son Leo be the Rovers mascot for the game against Southampton. Has he come down from the ceiling yet? What was the experience like?
Has he come down from the ceiling yet? No. He's just to paint a picture for you, he actually eventually decided to go to sleep about 10:45 on Saturday night, which is a good solid 3 hours past his normal bedtime. And he did it cuddling his little match ball all the players had signed as well. I had to take it off him and put it on the side as well, so it's safe to say it left a very lasting impression on him. But what I would say is, I know the club attracts a lot of negative press for how they've done a lot of things behind the scenes and Costco, you know, and quite rightly so in a lot of areas, but the match day mascot experience was terrifically well organized. The bloke did the ground tour, really informative. They kept the times well. One thing that I did get to learn, I suppose, is there is that when JDT was about, the mascots weren't allowed into the home changing room. They sort of all had to line up in the tunnel area, the mascots, and the lads went past, the players came in and signed the ball as they were going past. But since Eustace has come in, he's actually started inviting them into the dressing room. So we're quite lucky in that sense, in that I want to say it was about 1:30 when the players started turning up. All the lads went in with a ball and a pen, and they went around there and they were just basically told to mingle with the players. And what I would say with the players is, I remember trying to get autographs off a few players for my lads when he was a lot younger, maybe sort of 6-7 years ago. They were a bad bunch to try and talk to, the players at the time. But I must admit, the current lot, I mean, uniformly, they were so good with them. Ainsley Pears, by the way, was a bit of a star with Leo as well. No, really, really, you know, really, I mean, not just for him, but as a dad, obviously, I was piggybacking off this experience. I'm not going to lie to anyone here. I was enjoying myself as I was going along. But the last thing I'd probably add on it, though, is they need to keep doing things like that. There was 8 or 9 lads there who were mascots. It'd be lovely to obviously see more girls involved as well as the lads. But these types of things attract and retain these next generation of football fans as well, particularly in such a crowded market around the Northwest with teams that it's so much easier to go and support than Rovers, as I'm sure we're all abundantly aware. But things like that, I mean, trust me, I tried to almost, whatever a level below bully is, Leo, to try and follow Rovers over his life. Little experiences like that will now get him hooked in, you know, for the long run. The comment that did make me laugh at the end of the match, by the way, before I forget, the Southampton match, was about Callum Britton. There was a lad right behind me who remembered Southampton away, and someone said, Callum Britton playing Southampton, it was the worst of times, it was the best of times. And it did make me chuckle as well, just as an aside, because I know we went through all the players who have impressed recently, but I must admit, I thought he was standout man of the match at the weekend, Callum Britton, and it's only fair to mention that because he had a dog, obviously, last time we played him.
Wasn't that fantastic when they announced the Peter Jackson player of the match was Sam Gallagher? And then the picture of Callum Britton came up on the screen. You can obviously imagine, yeah. What? Who? Nobody told me.
Tannoy boat was quite quick on that, a full-time whistle again. So slight correction to make on this one. But yeah, no, I know it's a bit of a segue away from mascots to Callum Britton, but yeah, it was only fair to give him a little shout-out because I thought he was absolutely
excellent.
Excellent. Wonderful experience there for young Leo. Just without wanting to turn it completely negative, I'll come to Ian, you at the end, but I'd love to hear Richard and Michael's thoughts on the sort of Venky's court case updates or the statement. Rich, come to you first with this one. Anything sort of interesting that you've heard or anything more to what's come out?
I've spoke to a few Indian journalists to try and get the get some lowdown, but not really had anything back that's really given me any more insight than what's already out there. It did strike me as Rovers' statement was a bit like, yeah, this is all right, like nothing to worry about here, which you felt if that was the case, there was earlier junctures to do that. Does that mean something's changed? It's probably left more questions than it's answered anything by putting out that statement. And obviously the people that have been asked the questions, I don't know if it was asked to Greg, I'm not really sure in the guise of what is the court case actually about is his area to answer, in the same way that Eustace has been asked it. But again, probably not the person that can answer it. We've heard bits from Steve Waggett from the We Are Rovers Trust minutes. But again, it doesn't fill you with a great deal of, you know, confidence in or assurance, really. I think that's what everybody's after. And so we just bumble along and wait for August and then see what happens. So maybe something's changed. Maybe the hearing was different. It did seem initially like it was just an adjournment, which having sat through many court cases and you get to the end of the day and it's just, we can't be bothered with this one, let's bounce it down the road. So yeah, whether something's changed, I feel no more assured or any less clued up on what's going on, really. But the fact they tried to do that, is that the right way to go about it? I don't think so, unless you're going to come out and explain it. I think simply putting it a statement and saying, right, that's it, we'll chat again in August, lads, when the next one happens.
Hi, Cole. Come to you, sort of a last word for yourself on the podcast. In terms of Venky's talk,
as you may know, I edit a website called thebusinessdesk.com, yes. And it is one of our best read stories. You know, people love football business stories. I've just had a quick look. The top of our website at the moment is Everton being deducted 2 points. We've got a story up our sleeve about Bolton Wanderers annual results coming out. and people are interested in the Venky's Rovers story. I thought their statement was from the club was patronising and high-handed. I thought it didn't really show the empathy with the concern that the fans have got for the true desperate nature of the situation. They tried to minimise it. You know, they've referred in the past to social media speculation. And on this occasion, it was it's a technical adjournment. Well, it isn't, right? You know, the case has been delayed. It's been stretched out. And I just thought that was very disappointing on the club's part, but not unexpected.
Well, I mean, just interestingly, just without wanting to get too far away from Rovers, obviously we are a Rovers podcast here, but in terms of the wider football community, seems like a real crossroads. This white paper, this government,
The regulator.
The regulator, that's it. Thanks, Ian. Is it coming? When's it coming? Should it have already been going by now? It's like everything in football seems to be a bit muddy at the moment, it feels.
Yeah, right. I'll speak on this one. We've the thing Rovers fans need to be afraid of is actually implementing financial fair play. I alluded to Bolton Wanderers results coming out. You know, they're spending in excess of £4 million more than their income, and they've got a hotel that's helping to subsidise the club as a business. And Rovers, quite simply, on gates and season ticket sales of around 10,000 and, you know, gates of an average of about 14, 15, just won't compete in the division. You just look down it and it's clubs who have much better access to sponsorship, to TV. They're much more marketable as a TV product, and they attract more fans, which ultimately is, you know, the currency in the Championship. So I just wonder where our natural position in the natural order of things is. And it's probably somewhere around our current league position. Sadly,
interesting times ahead, I am sure, for not only Rovers but football in general, or English football in the wider sense. Ian, come to you just to finish off this week's podcast. You can wrap us up with a couple of looks, a couple of podcasts that you've done yourself in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, we had a musician on a couple of weeks ago, Tom Fleming, whose stage name is One True Pairing. If you haven't given that a listen, give his music a listen, if not the podcast. I think he's a lad from the South Lakes, Michael's old stomping ground. We used to travel down from there to watch Rovers in the 90s. His first match was the Shearer 10 out of 10 Peter White game against Leeds United. So we put a little clip in there. That's quite nice. And then last week, I spoke with Fraser Reid, who's head of consumer at Rovers, about kits, because there are so many questions that people ask about the whole process, whether that's who your supply contract is with, through to the design. How far ahead are you planning? Who has input, who signs off, and so on and so forth. What can go wrong? And Fraser shared a couple of very interesting tales on the podcast of where things have gone wrong and supply being halted on the high seas, shall we say. And I can confirm categorically that the planning process for the 150th anniversary kit is underway. There's been some, what is it, quantitative surveys done by Fraser. He sent out questionnaires and fans responded to those, I think, a few months ago. And now he's doing some qualitative stuff and sort of like putting together little focus groups and chatting to people and just trying to get an insight and an understanding as to what would float the boat, not just on the kits, but on also other associated merchandise that might go on sale around the 150th anniversary. So it's good to know that, you know, we do criticise the club, and I think when we criticise, we're aiming high, and we're talking about the owners and the CEO largely. There are a lot of really, really good people with really, really good intentions at Blackburn Rovers Football Club who are stymied because of our current financial situation. They don't have the latitude to do what they'd like to do, so they have to be incredibly creative. So coming out of that, often it's some really, really good work. So I'm hopeful that next year's kits will be influenced by the title-winning 95 shirts, apparently. So that's something to look forward to. And then we put forward lots of ideas to him about sort of design details that could be incorporated in the 150th. So it'd be interesting to see how that unfolds over the next few months. So, yeah, give that podcast a listen as well.
Yeah, certainly give that a listen. If you're a fan of kits, I'm going to give a big thank you to tonight's panel, to Ian, to Michael, to Mikey, and to Rich for joining me, Roger, on this week's 4,000 Holes podcast, the What Now Show, proudly part of the TalkSport Fan Network. Until next time, you stay safe and happy Eid to those celebrating, and we'll see you again very soon. Until next time, goodbye.
Mind you blues.
I'm trying to work out how to edit this into meaningful and usable podcast extra at the end for those who don't listen.
There was a spree last year, by the way, was it the year before, where John Buckley started following a few of us, and it was like, this guy's definitely going undercover to see what people are saying about him.
Failure is an orphan, but success has many parents, I think is the phrase.
Four Thousand Holes, no longer just a fanzine, now a podcast too, but you know that. You're listening to it.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.